House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It is 3:25 p.m. on April 4th. Members present are Representative Herron, Representative Reinbold, Representative Johansson, Josephson, Representative Sadler, and myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones. And today we have referral of appointees to boards and commissions and one bill on the agenda. We will not be taking up the referral from the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers of Britt Simoniak. Her appointment came up on Wednesday, or will be up on Wednesday's calendar. First item we have today are confirmation reviews and a referral of the appointees to the various boards and commissions that came to Labor and Commerce. Members have before them a list of the appointees and a draft memo to the chief clerk. I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Chenault. Members will note that Dennis Mandel was appointed to the State Assessment Review Board, has withdrawn his name from consideration, will not be brought up. I would entertain a motion to refer the appointees shown on the list to a joint session of the legislature for confirmation.
I move to advance the confirmation of appointees referred to the House and Labor Commerce Committee for consideration to the joint session of the House and Senate.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. A list of appointees was first distributed to all the members on February 7th, again on February 27th, and then on March 27th. My office has received three requests to have the following three appointees available for questions. The first appointee, and I believe he's online, is Albert Belia, who was appointed to the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation Board of Directors. Mr. Belia, are you with us?
Mr. Chairman, I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, coming through fine. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us today.
My name is Albert Belay, and I'm an appointee to the Board of Directors of the Alaska Gas Corporation.
Well, first off, we'd like to thank you for your past service, and we would I would like to open it up for questions. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Mr. Belay, my name is Andy Josephson. I serve in the state legislature. Thank you for joining us. Before I begin, Mr. Belay, like the other two gentlemen we'll be interviewing today, you've had an impressive career in the oil and gas industry. It's my understanding you were president of a BP transportation and chairman of Alyeska Pipeline Service Company from 2001 to 2007 and began working for British Petroleum in 1988. You returned to Alaska 5 years ago and are contributing to our university as a distinguished professor, adjunct professor of leadership. I appreciate your willingness to volunteer your time to share your knowledge and experience with the state. I have just a few questions for you. The questions I ask will relate to AGDC responsibilities under the governor's gas line proposal and any real or perceived conflicts with your career as a BP executive. First, what do you see as the AGDC's responsibilities if the large diameter gas line goes forward in the manner described in the governor's bill, the memorandum of understanding, and the heads of agreement?
The board, acting on behalf of the state, will represent the state's interest, ownership interest, in the large diameter pipeline. That would include participating in all joint venture operations with the other partners, with the operator, and generally provide governance over the operation of the pipeline through the commissioning through the operation phases.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In what situations might the state of Alaska's financial interests be different than the interests of TransCanada and the producers? How do you see that?
If the partnership is formed the way that I believe it will be formed with the bill that's in front of you, the interests should be, for the most part, aligned. That's the idea of what's being created here, where the state has a seat at the table and ownership interest, and the other operators and owners have an interest. Some of it is is not complete and consistent across the piece. And if that's where misalignments do arise, those would be the areas where we need to focus. But for the most part, I don't see conflicts or misalignments in what's being proposed.
Okay. Do you have any, Mr. Belay, do you have any perspective on the types of decisions or oversight that AGDC can exercise to defend Alaska's financial interest?
I think it will be fairly broad. We, as a board, will vote for various stages of the project. We will vote the state's interest in terms of whether or not the project's even sanctioned from the front-end engineering stages. As it progresses through the gate process, those decisions will come to the owners of the pipeline. And all the way up until through open season, the board will be actively involved in key decisions, again, on behalf of the state.
Okay. Just a couple more, and I'll be through with Mr. Belay. Mr. Belay, how can the Alaska public feel comfortable that the people of Alaska's interests, are being strongly defended by AGDC, when members of the board were high-level executives of the major three oil companies? And let me clarify what I mean. There's a very good argument that huge experience comes with those backgrounds and resumes. But I, at least as one representative, want members of the board who are biased toward Alaska, certainly within the law and good ethics. Is that a perspective that you'll share with me, or that you do share with me?
Representative, I am an Alaskan. I own real estate, and I have a house in Big Lake. I vote there. I go to church there. I have, in the last 24 years, there are only 4 years that I was not a resident full-time in Alaska. I'm retired from BP. It's a great company, and I really value the experience I had there. But I left that company 7 years ago. I have no financial interest in that company. I do not own any stock in that company. I'm committed to this project, and I'm committed to the project because I believe in it. And I believe it'd be a great thing for Alaska. It's Alaska's future, and I want to be a part of that future. So I think my interests and your interests are completely aligned.
Okay. Can I ask you just one last question? Mr. Belay, and this is mostly sort of a, I don't know if it's metaphysical or theoretical, but do you think as a general question or general proposition that just as you've had 7 years away from the industry, that not that we should have a statutory requirement like that, but that there's some value in having that sort of separation?
I honestly haven't thought about that way. We all took an oath, the oath was to defend the interest of the state of Alaska. Of the board members that I know on the board, I believe they're all of the highest integrity. So I think we would probably want to focus on whether or not we trust the individual and the demonstrated integrity of the individual and not exactly where they came from when we're trying to make that decision.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Mr. Lloyd, just a couple of brief questions about the work so far that AGDC has done. Just outline for us, and for the record here, how many times AGDC's board has met to date and what work you've taken up and what accomplishments you've been able to post in that time.
Well, I think our first unofficial meeting was in October. We were all fairly eager to get started, and I don't think officially we were sanctioned yet as a board, but we all got together in Anchorage just to understand what our responsibilities were going to be. I think we've met, except for December, every month thereafter, and a couple months we've had teleconferences and midweeks. We focused initially on getting organized, and there was a lot of effort put into trying to understand our governance role and to put a governance process in place for the company where we could assure the state that the decisions that were being made by management were being made at the highest possible standard. We have divided ourselves into committees based upon our areas of expertise. It's a commercial committee, a technical committee, an audit committee, and there's a fourth committee. And those committees have met, and our role is to assist staff. What I mean by that is if staff needs particular expertise for a decision that they are working on, they will call the committee. The committee will convene, and we will assist the staff to the extent the staff needs help. We don't make decisions in those committees. Those decisions are made at the board. So what the board is providing is leadership in terms of governance, performance management through the governance model that we put in place, and then we're providing assistance, technical and commercial assistance based upon our areas of expertise. In terms of accomplishments, to be quite honest with you, you all down there in Juneau have given us a lot to work on, and it's been quite an experience keeping the company focused on the small diameter pipeline, but also contributing to what you all are trying to accomplish with the large diameter pipeline. Probably a bit more than what I expected when I stepped into it.
Thank you.
Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Belay, since the governor asked you to work on this board, and I appreciate your taking on the challenge, a two-part question. Now that you've been working with the others for a few months now, first, what surprised you? And second, what do you perceive as your immediate, say, 60-day challenge before you?
What surprised me initially was the composition of the board. And it was a pleasant surprise. I have been on other boards before, and frankly, I was stunned how well the skill set was considered when the board was put together. Not only the two commissioners, who both bring a lot to the board, but the people from the private sector who are on that board it was thought through in terms of the regions of the state that they represent and the backgrounds that they have. It is without a doubt the highest quality board I have ever been on. And that surprised me. I didn't expect it, and I have to acknowledge the governor did an outstanding job, or his staff did, in thinking through the sorts of decisions the board would have to make and the level of expertise and the quality of the leadership that would be required to make those decisions. That's probably the thing that surprised me the most. The second thing would have been Dan Fowsky and his team. I would put these folks up against anybody. I would definitely put them up against any of my BP teams. This is an amazing group of people who are being steered by a very impressive leader. What do I see as the challenges in front of us? All big projects have technical issues. Nothing ever goes exactly according to plan. And being nimble enough, being mature enough, to have the right interventions when things aren't going on according to plan, that's the big challenges we'll have of a project, of either project, the small diameter pipeline or the large diameter pipeline. We're dealing with vagaries in terms of the terrain that we're dealing with, the supply chain in terms of what it's actually going to cost, and mobilizing a workforce and dealing with stakeholder interests will be will be huge. And we have to be incredibly thoughtful that everyone involved in the state has a seat at the table and that we're dealing with all the interests that need to be considered. It's no small task.
Mr. Chairman, just one more follow-up. Thank you, sir. Just one more follow-up. Of course, John Burns is a friend of many of us at the table and throughout the legislature. And as chairman, he probably has expectations of you. How do you perceive those expectations of your role on the board from the chairman?
I think what John's looking for from me is insights. He wants me to bring insights about how big projects are managed, how oil and gas companies make decisions, how we align ourselves constructively with the project, how we staff ourselves so that we have the right level of expertise within the organization. I believe John's basically drawing on my expertise in the career that I have had in the industry, and that's what he expects me to bring. Well, that's different than John is, he doesn't have that. John's been doing a great job as our chairman. I have a lot of time for him, and I respect him. And he sees the individual expertise and the capabilities of people on that team, and he's leveraging them, which is what he should be doing.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. I hope I answered your question.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Reinbold.
Hi, Al. I have not met you, but I am taking a good look at your resume. And so I have a little bit of a comment to make. Basically, I'm totally impressed with your interest in care, for cancer. You've been on early learning. You've been on Catholic Social Services. You've been on the Dean's Advisory Board for UAA College of Business. You've been chairman of UAA Leadership Initiative Board. You've been president of the International Economics Association, Anchorage. A look at your education. You've got a business management with summa cum laude. You've got an MBA from the University of Pittsburgh. Again, Beta Gamma Sigma Honorary Fraternity. You've been a manager of JMW from California. Advanced Management Program in Paris. Executive program from the University of Cambridge. I could go on and on, but I'm just amazed. You've got state, you've got national, you've got international. The state, I think, is incredibly fortunate to have someone with your ability, with your resume. And my question to you is why? You could really take it easy and not get involved. And I'm just really curious. You got to just care is the only thing I'm thinking, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. But if you could just explain why you would want to be on this, that would be fabulous.
That's a complicated question, and I'll try and have a simple answer for it. I have not been in the past a big supporter, at least the past 5 years, of a gas pipeline project. And the reason I wasn't is I was involved on the periphery as an executive at BP with the big push that Governor Murkowski had in the negotiations with the pipeline or with the owners many years ago. And I left that somewhat it's beyond disappointed. I was depressed by the way the thing ended because it seemed like such a perfect opportunity. And when I sat and I looked at what happened, there were a whole bunch of reasons why things didn't work. And when I compared that to where this project is now, it's night and day. And when I saw the legislature pass House Bill 4, that was a big, bold act of leaders of the legislature. I was so impressed by it, I was so inspired, that it caused me to come down out of the stands, if you will, and get on the field. I think I have something to contribute. There's leadership in the legislature that wants this thing to happen. There's the governor's provided a lot of leadership. There's a couple of commissioners who have been, and you know them, way out in front, taking on tremendous personal risk to try and make something happen. I think it's time for me to do the same. And sure, I could sit back and golf and do the retiree thing, but I want to be part of something that makes a difference in the state. This is the moment. This is the time. The forces are aligned, and we have quality leadership at all levels. I'm inspired, and I want to be a part of it.
Okay. Al, that was fabulous. I think there's huge risk and huge reward for the state, and I just really want to say thank you for your willingness to serve. You got a big job ahead of you, and I certainly wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Mr. Boulay, this is Kurt Olson. I've got a relatively simple question, and all I need is a rough number, but the definition currently of the legislature of mega projects are projects in excess of $1 billion. I'm just curious as to, during your career, how many approximately have you been involved with?
I have been directly involved in two projects that were over that level, from the design through the commissioning and startup phases. But when you have a career with a company at an executive level as long as I have been, I was involved in a lot of projects that cost that much and many, many more, and I had direct responsibility for making those projects run successfully.
That was kind of the answer I thought I was going to get, but thank you. Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how much farther to go into this. His personal and educational concerns have been laid out. Mr. Chairman, the only other one I had was I see, Mr. Boulay, that you are a golf enthusiast. Now, you did state that you've been retired for 7 years. And so I'm going to assume that you've had the opportunity to use the flat stick around the course a little bit, so your handicap has probably went down. I just want to assure you that if you continue on the AGDC board and you work as hard as I hope John Burns and Dan Fauske make you, that your handicap will end up being like mine and be fairly high.
I look forward to the opportunity to show you that.
Thanks again, Mr. Boulay, for joining us today, and I think we're going to move on to Mr. Rabenow. Are you with us? And for the record, Mr. Rabenow has already been appointed to AGDC, and what we will be attempting to do is putting his name forward as well. Thank you for joining us, and would you like to make a prepared statement or just go straight into questions?
No, I think there's been plenty of discussion about me and the position, and I just soon go right to the questions.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Mr. Rabenow, Andy Josephson here. You've had an impressive career, as has Mr. Boulay, in the oil and gas industry. According to your resume, you began working for Exxon in 1968 and retired as president of ExxonMobil Pipeline in 2002. I appreciate your willingness to share your expertise with our state. As you sort of inferred, there was a lot of discussion about your Texas residency, but I'm not going to go into that today. That can be aired in other quarters. The questions I do want to ask relate to the AGDC's responsibilities under the governor's gas line proposal. Should the state of Alaska and its citizens have any real or perceived concern about conflicts with your career with ExxonMobil?
I think that questions of conflicts are always appropriate to consider in any circumstance, so I think that's fine. I think that in my case, first of all, I think I have to stand on my personal integrity and demonstrate that. But I think that having been retired for 12 years from Exxon and having no ties to Exxon or ExxonMobil, and having done and many other things in the intervening years, one can look, if they would choose to, at what I've done and the way I've conducted myself, and I think that people who do that would come away feeling comfortable that I've demonstrated a high level of integrity and then should not be concerned about that.
Okay. Yes. What do you view, Mr. Rabineau, as AGDC's primary responsibilities if the large diameter gas line moves forward to pre-feed and then feed?
Well, I think that perhaps the most immediate challenge that AGDC faces is really a two-pronged responsibility. And I know you're asking just about the large line, but I think that we have a responsibility to continue to develop the ASAP line, the small line, and really make sure that we develop that and understand that. We know what the benefits are, what the costs are, how that would work. At the same time, on a separate track, we have to basically bring the same level of understanding, knowledge, cost, benefits, and so forth with regard to participating with the industry in a large line. And there are undoubtedly, even despite the agreements that have so far been hammered out, there are going to be many more commercial considerations that have to be dealt with, and costs and so forth. And I think I see AGDC having a responsibility to the legislature and ultimately to the executive branch to be able to compare the two projects on a equal kind of a footing, equal development, and be able to compare the relative costs, the relative benefits, what issues there are, what challenges and risks there are, so that we can then be in a position to recommend to the legislature, as well as to the executive branch, which course ultimately would be better for Alaska, and be able to demonstrate why we feel, you know, what the basis for that recommendation would be. So it's not just what do we need to do with the large line, but I think we have a continuing responsibility with the ASAP line as well.
A follow-up question? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rabineau, that answer was interesting to me because I haven't, although the current law says House Bill 4 is sort of your marching orders, I haven't heard that in any committee. Now, it could be I'm wrong, and that at some point AGDC is supposed to refer that question to the legislature for its consideration. Do you know, what is your understanding of when or if the small diameter gas line files get put away and the large diameter gas line is the project?
I'm not aware that there's any particular timeline or date, if you will, but I've said recently to Dan Foskey and to John Burns, and at several of our board meetings, we've had the commissioners from DOR and DNR present, and in those we've talked a little bit about this, and I feel very strongly that we need to continue to move both of these forward. We need to get them onto a parallel time track. I mean, right now, because of the history, ASAP is out in front by a year or two, perhaps, versus the larger project. And when you step back and really think about what ultimately is best for Alaskans, you need to consider a number of things. And it takes good analysis to be able to make that comparison, a lot of homework to do it. But some of the things that I've been thinking about is the right answer to try and provide natural gas to Alaskans who are going to burn it, whether it's in Fairbanks or the South Central area or whatever, the cheapest that they can get it, or is it to realize the greatest value to the state for this wonderful resource that exists on the North Slope, so that the state, everyone in the state, and all the services and so forth that the state derives from its revenue can be used for all Alaskans. And I'm not certain at this point, and I don't think we know yet, how the two of those would balance out one against the other. And my way of thinking, when you do any large project, always has alternatives. I mean, they may not necessarily be like this, where you sort of have two different paths that you've gone down, but every project has more than one alternative. And in order to make an ultimate decision as to what you want to sanction, you really need to develop each one far enough so that you have comfort, that you understand, as I say, what the costs are, what the benefits are, what issues there are, what risks there are. And then you can, it's always a judgment, but then at least you're in a position to make a decision and go down that path.
Well, yes, I guess I'm, Mr. Abner, you know obviously a lot more about pipeline development projects than I'll ever pretend to know. It just seems to me that at some point this governor or future governors are going to want the $3+ billion a year revenue that Commissioner Rodell has discussed could materialize. Wouldn't that at some point be overwhelming sort of pressure, if not other more concrete pressure, on AGDC to accept a large line?
Well, perhaps it would be, but, and I think this is where both the executive branch and the legislature have to come into think considering what the financial implications are of one versus the other, what the capital requirements are, depending upon what kind of a structure is arranged and what the funding is, what proportion, say, AGDC on behalf of the state owns, and what the role in the gas treating on the slope, the pipeline itself, the LNG facilities, the capital contributions, all of those can have a huge impact on the state and its ability to fund these different alternatives and hence to realize the benefits.
Okay. Just a couple more, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rabineau, just as I asked, so you don't think that I'm picking on you, just as I asked the previous nominee, the Alaska public, I think I've lived here 50 years, I have a sense of it a little bit, has... They want to feel comfortable that Alaska's interests are being strongly defended by its agencies and its commissions. What assurances can you give to the Alaska public that your strong career and in important positions with the with Exxon primarily are things that you bring to the table in helpful ways, but that you now represent Alaska citizens?
Well, obviously, as everyone appreciates, I'm not an Alaska citizen, so I have that, if you will, disadvantage. On the other hand, I think that my record and as a leader, not only of Exxon Mobil Pipeline for six years when I served in that capacity, but I also was chair of the Association of Oil Pipelines, and all my peers at the time be aware of leadership that I played on an industry basis, not just representing ExxonMobil, but also changes that we made from the liquid pipeline industry that's significantly improved the operating performance, that's reducing spills and safety incidents in pipelines. That's one measure. Another is since I retired 12 years ago, I've been involved in a number of other activities, including three studies with the National Academy of Science, in which, again, I was able to demonstrate an independence and taking the merits of whatever the study was that we were involved with, and they all involved in some way or other pipelines, related to pipelines, but demonstrating that I was not wed to, just because I had worked for a particular company, that in any way influenced or swayed how I considered the problem, that its analysis, its data, its objectivity, and ultimately my integrity. But, you know, I have to stand on my personal integrity, and many people can vouch for that.
My last question, Mr. Chairman, if I could. Mr. Rabineau, as I asked your colleague a few moments ago, within the law and within good ethics, and without treating our partners in this prospective plan as enemies in any way, I really want AGDC members that love Alaska, they're biased toward Alaska's interest. Will you be that kind of person? Will you be thinking of the 720,000 Alaskans when you make your decisions?
Absolutely. There's just no question that my goal in participating in this is to make sure that we do our work carefully, thoughtfully, that we, in any agreements that we reach, we are writing those documents, negotiating those documents in a way that is the most favorable that we can for the state of Alaska and for its citizens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rabinow, this is in some ways a learning opportunity, a teaching opportunity. Could you describe briefly the application process you went through and with special emphasis on any financial disclosure forms you had to fill out or information you had to reveal to the public to get this nomination?
Okay, sure. Back in the spring, I don't know if any of you know Dave Norden, who is in DNR, and I think actually had worked for AGDC for a while. And I had first met him when I was associated with Alyeska about 20 years ago. Dave had come down to the Offshore Technology Conference in Houston last May. We had breakfast together. We hadn't seen each other for a while. And I think he was working on some projects in DNR, pipeline integrity, and I think he was thinking that possibly I could be of some assistance to him. As it turns out, we didn't hook up on and doing something. But back then, about 4 weeks later, he sent me an email notifying me that there was on the website a call for nominations or for positions on the board at AGDC, and that, in his opinion, knowing my background and knowing me, he thought that I would be a good candidate. So I did some investigation of it to try and find out a little bit more about it, what would be involved, the responsibilities, and so forth. And after having done that, and talking to a number of people about it, I then decided that this was something that I would be willing to put my name forward. So I, through the office and the person in the governor's office who handles appointments, I submitted a resume and indicated a willingness to be considered. After a while, they came back to me and they requested names of people that knew me, that I'd been associated with over the years, that I would be happy to have interview me and that they could interview about me. And the list was broad. I mean, because I've had an association with Alaska for the last 25 years or so. And, the former Attorney General Bruce Patello and I got to know each other pretty well. We were negotiating some things related to TAPS, but others as well. And I gather they were contacted. Then the final step before being appointed was that the governor arranged to talk to me personally about this and ask me questions, some of which were very similar to kinds of questions that you're asking. Why did I put my name forward? Why was I interested in this? And so forth. And then I found that I had been nominated or named to the board. You asked about financial disclosure. One of the requirements then within 30 days of that of being nominated was to go through the standard state requirement of submitting financial information. And in fact, that was done for last year, and then we just had to update that here a few weeks ago. And then I guess the next step is what we're going through currently, which is the approval by confirmation by the legislature.
And Mr. Rabinow, did the financial disclosure, public official financial disclosure, give you any pause to consider not going through with the nomination?
No. I serve on another government corporation. In this case, it's in Houston, Texas, and it's a Texas state corporation, but it's involved with the city of Houston, so I've had to do it for that. For each of my three assignments with the National Academy of Science for the studies I've done there, I've had to do the same kind of conflict of interest and financial disclosure and so forth. So this is, since I've retired in the 12 years, I've done this several times, and so it didn't really give me any pause.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rabinow, appreciate this opportunity to ask you a couple of questions, and they will be similar to that I offered to the other gentleman. But before that, after reading your biography, obviously you've had a full career, but in the career, not in your life, is even though you've been given all these challenges and you've succeeded, was there anything in your career that your career bucket list that you didn't get a chance to do?
Yeah, there was one. Shortly after I joined what was then Humble Oil, predecessor, my supervisor at the time asked me if I would like a foreign assignment. And I came home and consulted with my wife, and we decided, yeah, we would love one. We thought it would be interesting. So I came back the next day and said, sure. That was sort of the kiss of death. I never did have a foreign assignment. I kind of kidded that I wished I'd said no, and I probably would have been on the first plane. But I was very fortunate. In my Exxon career, in 34 years, I had 17 different jobs covering a wide range of areas. And it was kind of unusual in many respects in that it gave me a very broad perspective of different parts of the business, different aspects of it, different considerations. And that has enabled me to gain a much better overall understanding, not just in pipelines or not just in oil and gas, but a lot more overall energy and how it fits in the community, all communities and so forth.
So a follow-up, Mr. Rabineau, is now that you've been working with other board members, like the question to your colleague, what has been the surprise and what do you perceive is the largest challenge over the next couple of months?
Okay, from a surprise standpoint, I guess I hadn't fully appreciated how much work had been done prior to the board being appointed last fall. And when we had our first formal board meeting in Anchorage, I believe it was in October, and I came up 2 days early, and I spent the 2 days basically meeting with each of the key staff people to get to know them and to understand about their background and as well as what they were doing and what challenges they were facing and what they were interested in. And I came away being hugely impressed by the caliber of people that Dan Fasky and Joe Dubler have been able to put together to work the standalone pipeline project. It was very impressive. I think Al Belay said this, but I think they would hold up extremely well with any of the industry company teams that are working on these things. Very, very impressive. And so I think that was probably the thing that a very pleasant surprise to see the quality of the team, their breadth, and the progress they had already made. In terms of where we go, to me, I having been involved in large projects of various sizes and complexity, I think I have an appreciation for the challenges that it and how hard it is to do the work, the homework, and the preparation and so forth, so that the project, when it is sanctioned, will go forward and can be brought in on schedule and on budget. It's very challenging to do that, especially when you have big, complex projects. And I think that I'm not sure that we yet in AGDC fully appreciate just how challenging that is. I mean, there's a lot of people who remember TAPS and its construction and so forth. And there were problems that were encountered then. And that was a smaller project than, say, the big pipeline would be. And we need to think long and hard about how to organize. And it's really the combination of the producers, TransCanada, and AGDC, the state, how to organize, how to work in a collaborative way to be sure that we develop this properly, that we understand what we're getting into, how to proceed with it, so that we can, in fact, deliver a final result that is on budget, on schedule.
So, Mr. Chairman, one final question. So, Mr. Rabinow, is we travel in different circles, so we don't know each other. But obviously, here very quickly, you became a household name in Alaska. And what I admire about it was your polished response. But I would ask you to share with us, did you understand the reaction from many people from around the state?
I certainly when I submitted my name to be considered, I didn't appreciate that there was any question as to whether one was a resident or non-resident, whatever. Certainly there was nothing to indicate that that was would be an issue, and so I never thought about it. I felt that this is something that where I could make a contribution and what have you. Now, since the matter has been raised, and I guess initially it was raised in another commission or board, not ours, and then my name surfaced on this, I can certainly appreciate the feeling of Alaskans about this. And certainly I can appreciate that if somebody with good qualifications is available, I can well appreciate why it's perfectly reasonable and sensible and why people would just as soon have somebody who is an Alaskan serve on the board. So I don't have any question about that.
So I guess there's one follow-up, Mr. Chairman, is Mr. Rabinow, is that though I appreciated how you handle it, many others as well do, and to say the least, that there are many defenders of this appointment, and many people are working hard to make sure it happens. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Rabinow, this is Kurt Olson. I've got one question, the one I had for Mr. Belay. Approximately how many mega projects have you been responsible for during your career?
I'd say two or three specifically, but then many, many projects, and even projects that are only a few hundred million dollars, depending upon where they are, if they're in 5,000 feet of water in the Gulf of Mexico, they may not, in dollar terms, be considered mega projects, but in terms of the environmental issues, in terms of the technical challenges and so forth, they can be just as complicated as that. I was very much involved in the response to the Valdez oil spill. And, you know, we don't think of that as a project as such, and Lord knows we would have been very happy never to have had to face that experience. But, you know, that too was a mega project in which I played a significant role in the response.
And thank you again for participating today. Oh, Representative Reinbold, I'm sorry.
That's okay. First of all, thank you very much for being interested in this. Until someone comes up with another industry to draw revenue from, oil and gas is the bread and butter up here in Alaska. And with that, I definitely want the best and brightest overseeing the projects. And I hope I don't mess your resume up, but it certainly, because you've got jewels hidden all throughout these pages, but it looks like you're a Penn State University graduate from a bachelor's.
Lehigh.
Okay.
Lehigh undergraduate, MIT graduate.
Okay, yeah, I was getting to the MIT. Your resume is in paragraph form, so it's a little bit harder for me to understand. But it says a master's degree in mechanical engineering and in management from MIT. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and then a bachelor's of science from Lee University?
Lehigh, right.
Lehigh, sorry about that. I don't mean to be, your resume is just amazing, and the experience that you have is absolutely incredible. And basically, I just feel stunned that you're interested in wanting to come and participate in such an amazing project being not even from here, you know, just wanting to participate in this process is really, I believe, an honor for the state. And so I would just like to ask you why. Why are you interested? I mean, knowing that you might have to come drive on our icy streets sometime in the winter up here, which I could consider a liability from someone from the lower 48. But I'm just curious about your interest, because you just have phenomenal background.
Okay, well, first of all, I might say that the governor asked me the same question. And my response then and to you today is, and it builds off something I said a few minutes ago, I was very fortunate to have a wonderful career, a very broad career. And at this point in my life, I'm not a golfer. I'm like, say, Mr. Belay. And so what I've been wanting to do is to do things that are interesting and challenging, and where I can take the things that I've learned and along the path and be able to give back and contribute. And whether that's with the National Academy studies that I've been involved with, whether it's with the Houston First Corporation in Houston, which is a, as I was kind of alluding to before, a government corporation. We manage the convention center and a convention hotel and the theaters where the symphony and opera and ballet perform. I mean, it's totally different, but it has business connotations and so forth. Something like this is something where I think I have a unique background, and it's fun to be able to contribute and to be able to help achieve the results, in this case, for the citizens of Alaska, but in each of the endeavors that I've participated in, to be able to give back after having had having been so fortunate of having had a wonderful career.
Thank you for your willingness to serve. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks again, Mr. Rabinow. Next up, we have we'll move on to Mr. Washington. Are you with us, Mr. Washington? And if you'd like to make a prepared statement, please go ahead. And if not, we'd go straight into questions.
You can go right into the questions.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know Mr. Washington a bit, so if I ask some sort of what I think are thoughtful questions, I don't think he'll be frustrated, but he can let me know if he is. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Washington has a background with the United Way Board, Anchorage Health and Human Services, the 4-Acre Group, and ConocoPhillips as, I think, one of its economists. And I want to thank him, and I appreciate his willingness to serve our state on the SARB board and acknowledge his contributions to the institutions I mentioned. Mr. Washington, one of the legislature's primary duties in reviewing appointments is to ensure appointees have the qualifications required by law. In the case of the SARB, statute requires each board member, quote, must be knowledgeable of assessment procedures. An AG, Attorney General opinion from 1986 says the requirements also should reflect some experience with government tax function. Do you think that you meet the qualifications?
Yes, I do. I've actually testified in front of the SARB in previous positions, actually did the assessment from the oil company's perspective for some of the facilities. So my job was, you know, I'm an analyst and economist, and what I do is the numbers, do the analysis, and have in the past done those things.
Any question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Washington, what would you say to Alaskans who are concerned that your long history with ARCO, Conoco, and Alyeska will make it difficult to look independently at tough valuation questions and represent the people of Alaska?
Well, first and foremost, I'm an Alaskan. I've been here for 30-some years. I believe in Alaska. I care about the people of Alaska, as witnessed by my participation in United Way, 4-Acre. I'm the treasurer of Beans Cafe. I care about Alaska. That's first and foremost. I've had opportunities to, you know, leave the state with ARCO or Conoco and elected to stay here. And so my commitment's here. My commitment's to Alaska.
All right. Mr. Chairman, may I just continue?
Certainly.
Thank you. Mr. Washington, there was a recent article in the Columbia University Journalism Review about the appropriateness of your working at APRN, given your potential position on the SAR board. What are your thoughts on that issue?
Well, the issue was a matter of a conflict, and since I have nothing to do with the news side, I manage the finances. I do the numbers. I don't get involved with the news or any of the aspects of the news. I don't select stories. I don't have any participation in the news side of the business. So I don't view that as there being any conflicts that could impede my participation with the SAR board.
All right. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Washington, I'd like to ask you about some valuation questions and how you might approach your task. Have you reviewed the Supreme Court decision from February 19th of this just a couple months ago?
Yeah, just at a very high level. I haven't gone into the details or the underlying assumptions, but yes, I did review it.
Okay. In that decision, the owners of TAPS argued that the economic life of the pipeline was shorter than the Supreme Court concluded it is. If the Supreme Court says, enters what we call a rule of law, will you follow that rule of law?
Most definitely.
Okay. And let me give you an example, if I can read just a single sentence, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
From that decision, the Supreme Court said, in this case, the primary value of the pipeline is its ability to monetize Alaska North Slope oil reserves because the companies collecting tariffs are closely affiliated with the companies paying tariffs, close quote. When the Supreme Court has made that kind of ruling, is that something that you would ask them to make again? And what I mean by that is, when you meet with your colleagues on the SAR board, would you say, but gentlemen, or if they're gentleladies, this is what the Supreme Court has said, and we must follow what the Supreme Court has said? Does that make sense?
That would be my position.
Okay. When the case, Mr. Chairman, when the case went to trial, the case I'm speaking of, from 2006, I think, the industry argued that TAPS was worth only $850 million. The local government said it was worth $11.57 billion. Do you think there's a way for the SARB to analyze these valuation questions so that there is less disparity, or is this just sort of the product of the adversarial system?
Well, to answer your question, I think there is a way to sort of find that sweet spot, and that goes into analyzing the underlying assumptions used by all parties, and then testing those things, those assumptions for reasonableness, and then coming up with the appropriate answer. So, yes, I guess that's to answer your question, yes.
Okay. Mr. Washington, in that same case, the pipeline owners said that the pipeline should be assessed at a fair market value as measured by tariff income rather than use value as measured by replacement cost. Do you have any thoughts on that ruling?
You have to go with the ruling. But the bottom line is, unless someone appoints me to the Supreme Court or something like that, I say you have to follow what the court says.
Okay. Through the chair, Mr. Washington, one of the things that caused the Supreme Court to rule as it did is that they couldn't figure out. They agreed that the trial court could not properly calculate a fair market value for TAPS or for shipping capacity on the pipeline, partly because there was no real comparable to TAPS. Did that make sense to you?
It is a unique project. There's not a whole lot of, when you do an assessment or value, it's comparables. For example, the housing market, you look at the comparable sales in the area, so you come up with a value for the house that you're assessing. In the case of a pipeline like TAPS, there are no comparables, so it makes it much more difficult to assess the overall value of the asset. So therefore, you have to go and look at other intrinsic aspects of the pipeline, like what's the projected throughput, how long it's going to, what's the life of it, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, that it does present a problem.
No more?
Yeah, thanks. We're almost out of time. Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Washington, obviously the governor and many other people believe you have the talent for this job. But can you gauge what you think your learning curve will be if confirmed?
That's a real interesting question. My learning curve has, just from the standpoint of my application to this point in time, is I didn't expect what I've encountered. But I believe my background, my analytical abilities will help both the board and me achieve a level of understanding fairly quickly.
So, Mr. Question, this is a short one. So, most of us, probably nearly all of us, are laymen about this job. So, what do you think is the most misunderstood aspect about this job for the laymen that are, of course, going to depend on your decisions?
At least, and this is my perspective, I think people just don't understand that an assessment is based on analysis of underlying values and variables. And if you do a good job of understanding the variables and then analyzing those variables and coming up with a reasonable approach, the assessment sort of falls from that. And most people think that it's just, you know, somebody sits back and says, oh, it's worth this, and moves forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Rangel.
Thank you. And, Mr. Washington, I apologize. I had stapled your resume to the previous person's, and I was extra impressed with both the resumes put together. So, actually, you're the one that has the Pepperdine University MBA in 1977 and the Penn State University Bachelor of Science in Mining Engineering. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
Wow, that's very impressive. I'm sure there's very few of those in the state. And I also see that you have interest in the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation and the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And as Reg Review Chair, I found that very intriguing. With your experience, I, again, think it's impressive. And I want to ask you, first of all, I want to say thank you, because I truly appreciate with someone of your caliber interested in serving. But I have a question. Why? Why are you interested in doing this?
Well, I believe that as an Alaskan, we have to give back. The state, this wonderful state, gives so much to us. It gives us, you know, free money through the permanent fund. It gives us one of the most spectacular places in the country to live. And if we're going to be here, if we're going to live here, we have to give back. And I thought that with my skill set that I could serve the state. And this is my first foray into, you know, service at a state level. I've chaired commissions for the municipality of Anchorage in the past, but this is my first foray into the state. And I thought it would, you know, I could benefit, and the state could benefit from my skill set.
Well, I would absolutely agree, and thank you for your willingness to serve.
Yeah, thank you again.
Thank you.
And next, I'm going to ask Comrade Jackson to come up and speak briefly. About the process, and then at that point in time, we'll go into public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson. Members have a copy of a memo to the chief clerk listing the appointees to the various boards and commissions to which they have been appointed. Mr. Chairman, all the committee members have had an opportunity to review these resumes or the resumes of these appointees. And only the three, which the committee was just speaking to, were requested to make themselves available. The members have completed those questions, and with that, with your permission, I will read the appointees' names and the boards or commission to which they have been appointed, if my voice holds out. Those appointed by Governor Parnell are to the Alaska State Board of Public Accountancy, Leslie Schmitz, to the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, Robert Klein, and Marvin Yoder. State Board of Registration of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors, Luann Yerfer, Brian R. Hansen, Donald John Christensen. to the State Assessment Review Board, Bernard, Washington. To the Barbers, Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, Janine Jabe, Derek Slaughter, Glenda Ledford. To the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, Christine Hill, Dr. Walter Campbell. To the Board of Dental Examiners, Dr. Thomas Wells. To the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation Board of Directors, Albert Belay, Dave Cruz, Drew Pierce, Richard Rabinow, John Burns. To the Alaska Labor Relations Agency, Willard Askren, Dr. Lynn Curry. The Board of Marine Pilots, Richard Erickson. To the Board of Marital and Family Therapy, Joanne Young. To the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives, Jennifer Swander. To the Board of Nursing, Aaron Evans, Mary Jenny Grimwood, Carrie Miller. To the Board of Examiners of Optometry, Dr. Damian Delzer and Eric Lingle. To the Board of Pharmacy, William Bill Altland, Ann Gruning. To the State Physical Therapy and Occupational Therapy Board, Dr. Ilona Farr, Dr. Joseph Kennedy, Mary Melissa Robinson. To the Board of Professional Counselors, Lynn Tashi. To the Board of Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers, David Derry, Alfred Ferrara. To the Real Estate Commission, Cynthia Cartledge. To the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, Robert Pickett. To the Board of Social Work Examiners, Laura Thyssen, Daniel LaFon, and Tina Walter. To the Board of Veterinary Examiners, Dr. Teresa Beck, Dr. James Hagee. To the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission, Philip Ulmer. And the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board, Julie Duquette, David Kester, Michael O'Connor, Donna Phillips, Mark Talbert, Zebulon Woodman. And Mr. Chairman, I do apologize to the committee and to the appointees for butchering anyone's name. And Mr. Chairman, I remind you and the committee members that the member's signature on the referral memo does not reflect their intent to vote for or against any of these individuals in a further legislative session for the purposes of confirmation.
Any questions for Conrad? And with that, I'd like to note and invite to the table, we've got Aaron Evans from the Board of Nursing, who is up for confirmation, who has signed up to testify. And you're welcome to? Nope. Oh, okay. And Beth Engstrom is also here from the Board of Nursing, Jenny Grimwald and Carrie Miller. Would you like to come up? Nope. Thank you for making the effort to come down. And with that, we will open it up to public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify? Seeing none, is there anybody online? With that, we will close out public testimony. Are there any further comments from the committee? Representative Joseph?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I intend to sign this document. I would prefer to demur as to Mr. Rabinow because I don't. The question of his eligibility is something I haven't concluded in my own mind. But given that it's no intent on my part to vote for or against him or anyone else, I intend to sign it. I just want to make the record clear about that.
It's all or none. But by signing, you're not committing either way or to anybody on the list, other than putting their names forward to the full body when all 60 of us get an opportunity to
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Pick and choose individually, I guess. Representative Herron?
Nope.
With that, I will remove my objection, and the appointees will be advanced to the joint session of the legislature, and a brief at ease. Record. Next up, under bills previously heard, we have House Bill 370, AWCB, Controlled Substance Prescriptions. We first heard this bill on March 19th. We heard it again on the 26th. Today it's my intention to take up the CS and the members packet and bring the bill back to the committee for action. To give us a brief recap on the bill is Anna Latham from my staff. Welcome back. Seems like you're just here.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anna Latham, staff to Representative Olson. And before you is the CS for House Bill 370. Would you briefly like me to explain the version A or just the changes?
I'd entertain a motion to adopt the CS's working document.
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute House Bill 370 version C as the working document.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Go ahead.
All right. Well, in the original bill, in Section 1, it gave employers the ability to drug test for Schedule 1 controlled substances after they've been prescribed to an employee as a result of a workers' comp claim for more than 90 days. Concerns were expressed with what would happen, what the follow-through was with those test results. So the following language was added to Section 1. There was language that specified that the employer could test only for the controlled substance and what would happen as a result of the tests. A negative test result may result in the denial of future payments by the employer for the controlled substance, but not in any other adverse employment action. And a positive test result for the prescribed controlled substance may not result in any adverse employment action or the denial of prescription benefits. Section 2 remains the same. Section 3, there is a subparagraph that's added that an employer may not be liable for future payments of a controlled substance listed in Schedule 1A prescribed to an employee under this section if the employee receives a negative test result. So the CS just puts into writing some follow-through for those test results. And I'd be happy to answer any questions on the CS.
Any question for Anna? And with that, we do have enough time. Would you care to come up, Don, just for a minute? And I'd like to be on the record that we have been working with a number of stakeholders in the group, and Don Etheridge is one of them. Could you please state your name and affiliation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Etheridge with the Alaska State AFL-CIO. And we'd like to thank you for working with us and making this a much better bill, and we are totally happy with what you've done on it.
Well, that was easy. Any questions for Don? Thanks again for coming today.
Thank you.
And with that, we also have signed up. We have Jacob Miller in the room, but not to testify. Nope. And off net, we have questions only from the AG. I don't think we have anybody have any questions for the AG's office.
Mr. Chairman, just so it's on the record, when Anna was testifying, is that, I mean, I understand what it means, positive and negative, but there, just for the record, when it's, most people think when it's positive, that means the test came back that there is something there.
Yeah.
If it comes back negative, it means that there's you're clean. But in this context, it's the opposite, the way she described it.
Anna, would you like to come back?
For the record, Anna Latham, staff to Representative Olson. And Representative Heron, you are correct in that description. And we are testing the intent of this to see if an employee is to see if an employee is taking the drugs that they were prescribed as a result of a workers' comp claim. So the testing is the opposite as how it normally would be under the employer testing policy in paragraphs C and D. So
that's
absolutely correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We do have a late sign-up to testify. Barbara Huff, thank you for joining us today. You don't have a cold, too, do you?
I'll be fine. At least I don't think it's catchy telephonically. For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Barbara Huff-Dagnus, excuse me, Director of Government and Legislative Affairs for Teamsters Local 959, and I'd like to go on record supporting the CS for House Bill 370. While we had some issues and concerns initially with the bill when it was introduced, the reality of what we're looking at, we believe that the majority of the workers that we do represent through proper safety programs and those on-the-job training programs assist or help reduce some of those workers' comp costs. Unfortunately, we have injuries that workers on the job ultimately end up sustaining. Through that, some of those injuries require particular prescriptions. Sometimes we have bad players, and I guess I'll probably be the first to admit that that may be the case. I have not seen those numbers. I don't know what kind of cost savings this will be, but if indeed this legislation actually gets to the root of that particular problem, then we're supportive. As long as this legislation, we believe with the changes that it's, that's been made, does not negatively impact those workers that are truly injured and are in need of these particular prescriptions.
And that was the intent. And thank you. Any questions for Ms. Huff? Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
With that, is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Public comments are still open. How about online? Nobody? With that, we'll close out public testimony. Any questions for Anna or from the committee? With that, I will remove my adoption to the or I'll move my objection to the adoption of the CS. CS is now before us. What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee Substitute House Bill 3728 LS1379-C with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill moves out of committee and we will adjourn at 4:45 and we won't be meeting tomorrow. Thank you.
Yay.